Zena, I'll always love you.
Welcome everyone to Zena Nobers Podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 166. This podcast show is for all the Zena Nobers subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. So hello everyone, welcome back to XNU, and I hope everyone is doing well. Me, myself, and I have been quite the busy little person, as usual, doing the honey-do list and getting things sorted. But that's a good thing. I mean, we all need to do things like that so that we can actually live. The song snippet you hear in this week's show is from Jason Derulo, and it's called I Don't Want to Go Home. Check it out on YouTube, buy the CD, enjoy the DVD, anything else that you might think about. Let's rock into the show. The book recommendation for this week's show is going to be High Impact by Kim Baldwin. Now, this is a yet-to-be-released book. It's going to be released in December, so maybe you can get that as an early Christmas present. The description, which, of course, I'll have a link in my show notes for you to go and read, starts out as this. Emery Lawson reinvents herself after a near-death experience, prompts a thorough reevaluation of her priorities. Empowered to live a life of no regrets, she casts aside all that is familiar to face her fears and chase her dreams. No risk is too high, no adventure too daunting, and no destination too extreme. But as she heads for the wilds of Alaska, romance is definitely not on her agenda because she's convinced she's incapable of falling in love. Pasha Dunn has learned to expect the unexpected in her job with an adventure outfitter in the remote Alaskan interior. Adaptability is essential in such a savage and unforgiving landscape, but she's woefully unprepared when her infallible intuition tells her that that client Emery Lawson is a soulmate she's been waiting for all her life. Emery is clearly determined to remain unattached, and her high-risk vagabond lifestyle is too far outside Pasha's comfort zone. All that they think they want and know will be challenged when they are thrust into a nightmare of survival and endurance high above the Arctic Circle. So that's High Impact by Kim Baldwin. All right, and going over for the movie of the week, we have Lavender Scare. Now, this is over at One More Lesbian, and I'm going to read a little bit for you, but as of always, the show notes will have a link to the website, and then you can also read more at going to thelavenderscare.com, which gives you a more detailed description. So, The Lavender Scare, a film by Josh Howard based on the book by David K. Johnson. The Lavender Scare is a documentary film about the U.S. government's relentless campaign in the 1950s and 60s to hunt down and fire every government employee suspected of being gay or lesbian. What became the longest and most intense witch hunt in American history. Thousands of gay men and women lost their jobs. Some lost their lives. Until finally, a courageous few fought back. So, that is The Lavender Scare. And once again, check it out. It's actually quite interesting on the trailer alone. And I'll have a link on my show notes.
Initializing process. Oh, crap.
And out in the World Wide Web this week, Renee doesn't have anything updated on her site, and neither does Sharon over at the Lucy Lawless site. But Mary D, of course, has the daily updates on what's been going on and pictures around the Xenoverse. She's got the IGN interview with Lucy and Edward James Olmos of 2006 in there. She's got some information about deleted scene for Xena video. She's got the Lucretia Lost the Plot pictures. It looks like Lucretia in Vengeance. You can check that information out and see pictures of it. And tips regarding Comic-Con for first-timers and things like that. So you can check it out at AUSXIP. And if anyone has anything going on the World Wide Web that they might know about, send them on in over at xena.uber@gmail.com.
Come and get them.
And we are going to cut to the chase in this week's show and go straight to the storyline, as I haven't got a lot of information going on in the World Wide Web, and not a lot of people are sending in information, and it's harder and harder for me to dig some of this stuff up. But we're just going to get right into the story and go on to Chapter 7 of I Found My Heart in San Francisco, Book 1, Awakenings, by Susan Mayer. When Jamie walked into Jack's apartment a little before 10 p.m., the look on his face said more about his displeasure than she wanted to know. "Hi, honey," she called out in greeting as she placed her overnight bag on the floor.
"Hi,"
he replied, barely looking up from his book. "Did you have dinner? I bought you some lasagna," she offered.
"Yeah, I made myself a sandwich,"
he said without elaboration. "Is everything okay, Jack?" she asked, even though she absolutely did not want to know.
"Sure. Why wouldn't it be?"
he coolly replied, again not lifting his head to look at her. She was already sick of this act, so she turned the tables on him a bit. "No reason," she said with a sweet tone. "I'm going to get ready for bed. Be back in a minute," she said lightly as she passed by and kissed his cheek. She could feel his eyes burning into her, and she walked down the hallway but refused to goad him into talking if he didn't want to. She brushed her teeth and washed her face, both with a leisurely pace. She stripped off her clothes and put on one of Jack's t-shirts, then picked up a novel by Jun Barnes that she had to finish by Monday. As she walked back into the living room, she asked if he needed anything while she was up. He definitely muttered something under his breath, and it sounded like
a full-time fiancé.
But she acted as though she had not heard a word, even though she was seething inside. She gave him a completely fake smile and sat down on the end of the couch to read. Just to piss him off, she put her feet up on his lap and refused to let his cold disregard penetrate her outer demeanor. Luckily, her novel was mesmerizing, and she was fully engrossed for almost 2 hours. True to his always stubborn form, Jack did not loosen up one bit. He did not touch her in any way, and he completely ignored her feet on his lap. At around midnight, he stretched and announced flatly,
"I'm going to bed."
She couldn't have passed a polygraph test on the issue, but she inadvertently dug her foot into a sensitive place as she lifted her legs from his lap. He grunted a bit, but still said nothing. The rigors of the day caught up with her, and she decided to turn in also. She turned off the lights and followed him into bed, where she expected the tension to remain. Much to her shock, as soon as he got into bed, he started to make sexual overtures. "Oh, please. You can't say a civil word to me, but now you want to screw me?" And for the first time in their relationship, she found herself intentionally trying to hurt him. "Jack, I have something to tell you," she said in a matter-of-fact tone. His head lifted from her breast with a quizzical look, but still said nothing. "I had a pregnancy scare this week," she informed him. She honestly had never seen an erection deflate quite so quickly. He shot up into a sitting position and stared at her with a look of pure horror.
"What happened? Why? What?"
he stuttered. "I haven't been feeling well for over a month, and I've been queasy in the mornings. But on Tuesday I passed out, and that made me take action," she related, leaving out every pertinent piece of information.
"What? Where?"
"I went to my doctor on Wednesday, and she gave me a pregnancy test. Obviously it was negative," she said without further elaboration.
"Where's your doctor?"
he finally got out. "Palo Alto," she said with a small smile, knowing that he would be hurt to find out her doctor was 3 minutes from his campus. He gave her a look of total disgust as he said,
"And you didn't call me to go with you? Need I ask who did?"
he added with a snarl. "Maybe if you tried really, really hard, you could be more self-centered," she said with yet another false smile. "I'm feeling sick for a month, unable to eat in the mornings because of nausea. I faint twice in one night and vomit all over Greater Berkeley. I have to skip a day of school to go to the doctor. I find out I've lost 10 pounds without wanting to. The doctor takes my blood and runs a bunch of tests to determine God knows what. But I can see that your most pressing concern would be who took me to the doctor," she snapped.
"You have the nerve, the unmitigated gall, to bust my chops and try to make me feel sorry for you,"
he shouted.
"How the fuck can I feel sorry for you when I don't know any of this? I'm your fucking fiancé, Jamie. And you don't tell me you've been sick. You don't tell me you're losing weight. And you don't tell me that you pass out. How in the fuck can I feel bad for you?"
He leapt from the bed and started pacing in a straight line, back and forth across the carpet. He was becoming more and more agitated by the minute. and Jamie was almost afraid of him. In 3 years, she had never heard him raise his voice, much less curse at her.
I can only imagine why you didn't tell me about your pregnancy scare,
he growled.
You and your body would just decide what to do about it. You two could have gone behind my back to abort my child.
Now he stopped abruptly and stared at Jamie with cold fury. But when he saw the frightened look on her face, every bit of his anger evaporated. He looked like he had been punched in the solar plexus as his shoulders dropped along with his head. All of the fire, all of the spark, were just gone. He came back to the bed and sat on the edge, facing away from her. He looked like a thoroughly defeated man, and as mad as she was, Jamie felt sorry for him. She crawled over to him and put her arms around him from behind. He stiffened at first, but as she murmured into his ear, he began to relax.
I would never do that, Jack. I would never ever abort a child, especially yours. I love you. I don't want to hurt you,
she whispered. He pulled her arms from his neck and got fully into bed. His last words were,
No matter what your intent is, you're hurting our relationship, Jamie. You need to make some choices.
They kept a very cool distance in bed. She was a bit dismayed to wake up at 7 to find him gone. There was a note on the kitchen counter that read, Law review deadline on Monday. Be back late, Jack.
Well, that says it all, she thought glumly. No, love, Jack. No, I'm sorry. No, I'll call you later.
Jamie booted up his computer and his printer. She sat down to compose her thoughts and then began to write.
Dear Jack, I'm sorry that I hurt you last night. I didn't mean to upset you. I know that I should have told you what was going on with me, but I didn't. I don't know why I didn't, but I will try to figure it out. Something is bothering me, and I need some time to work it out. If I stay here this weekend, I know I'll be angry that you're gone. So for both our sakes, I'm going home. Feel free to call me at home or on my cell phone. If you don't feel like talking today, or even for a few days, it's okay. I'm not angry with you, Jack. I know you're really busy, and I don't want to make things any harder for you. Whatever is bothering me is about me. So don't worry. I'm sure I'll feel better soon. I love you.
She printed off the note and signed it. After a few minutes of staring into space, she picked up the phone and dialed Ryan's pager. When she didn't get a return call immediately, she got in the shower and spent a long time letting the hot water clear her mind. She was just finishing drying her hair when her cell phone rang.
Jamie?
Asked a deep voice.
Hi, Ryan. I didn't wake you up, did I?
Heck no. Duffy and I were running on the beach. He won, of course, but we still had fun. What's up with you this time of the day?
She inquired.
Is that invitation to your party still open? I'm unexpectedly free today.
She stated the partial truth.
Absolutely. I'd love to have you,
she replied easily.
Are you okay? You sound kind of down.
I am, but just a little. Jack's tied up all day, and I didn't learn about it until this morning. I just don't want to sit here alone all day.
Well, you're never alone at your flatteries,
she replied.
Not even when you want to be.
Ryan gave her all the details of the party, and steadfastly refused her offer to bring anything. Jamie signed off and immediately felt better.
I've known her for 2.5 months. She can tell in 2 sentences that something is bothering me. I've been dating Jack for 2.5 years, and you can never tell when something is wrong. Though I just need more than he is able to give me. Can any guy make me feel understood like Ryan does? Maybe I just want things I can't have.
She drove onto Ryan Street at 2 p.m. sharp. She had a difficult time finding a parking spot, and finally wound up down the street and around the corner. As she climbed the stairs to the front door, she could hear a din of voices. Ryan answered the door and gave her a delighted smile, showing those incredibly white teeth.
Wow,
Jamie marveled.
She looks absolutely fantastic.
She mused that she didn't often step back and just look at Ryan objectively anymore. They had grown so close that she saw her inner self more than her package. But occasionally, she just looked at her and enjoyed the wrapper, and this was one such day. Her beautiful friend was wearing a black knit silk t-shirt that clung to every curve. Black linen pleated slacks and soft black loafers completed her monochromatic outfit. She looked exactly like Ryan should look. Tall, sleek, graceful, athletic, and terribly, terribly sexy.
Hi, I'm really glad you decided to come,
Ryan said enthusiastically as she gave Jamie a big hug.
You did say 2 p.m., didn't you?
She looked around the house, which was bursting with people.
Yep, that's when we wanted people to come. But in this family, they show up when they want to. We've had people show up at 9 a.m. for Thanksgiving dinner.
She laughed. As Ryan guided her into the teeming mass of people, Connor swooped down from his place on the staircase.
My, my, my. Don't you look lovely today?
He said as he looked Jamie up and down.
Isn't that a gorgeous outfit?
He said to Ryan as he continued to appraise Jamie, like a new Ferrari. Jamie was wearing a very slim-fitting sleeveless shell of newbie silk in tangerine and gold that just brushed her waistline. Slim-fitting slacks of the same material showed off her trim legs. A silk-knit sweater in the same tangerine was draped around her shoulders. Delicate leather-woven loafers in dark tan graced her feet. Jamie blushed a little as the two siblings conferred.
Yes, Connor, I would agree that Jamie looks marvelous today,
Ryan said with a big smile,
but I've yet to see her look less than lovely.
She had with a twinkle in her deep blue eyes. Ryan boosted the wattage of her smile and asked,
Have you been given a proper tour of our home, Jamie?
Not really, she replied wearily. I just saw this floor in Ryan's room, she admitted.
Ryan's manners are so atrocious sometimes.
He scoffed as he gave his sister an aggrieved little shake of his dark head.
Please allow me to make up for her faux pas,
he stated as he held out his arm to escort her. She giggled at his exaggerated gallantry and gamely took his arm. As he led her off, she turned to give Ryan a little wave. Ryan had narrower eyes in mock anger, but quickly broke into a smile. Connor escorted her up the staircase that rested at the rear of the small living room. He did not stop to introduce her to the many people that they climbed over, and she noted with a smile that they all continued their conversations as though they did not notice the interruption. They walked carefully up the stairs to the third floor. This floor consisted of two good-sized bedrooms and one small bath in between. He pointed at a room filled with instrument cases, open luggage, and clothes strewn about.
Rory's getting ready to go for a bit of a tour,
he explained.
He and the band are leaving tomorrow for a month.
Really? She inquired. Where's he going?
I believe they'll just be on the West Coast,
he replied.
He does a lot more traveling in the summer. They're playing in Ireland and Scotland this summer, as a matter of fact.
I would really love to hear him play, she admitted. By the way, Ryan says you all play an instrument. What is your specialty?
I spent most of my youth playing the fiddle and the bazook,
he replied.
But now I spend most of my practice time playing the mandolin.
I have no idea what a bazooki is, she admitted. But I know a mandolin when I see one. Do you practice often?
She inquired as she turned from Rory's room to face him. I play for enjoyment more than I do to become more proficient. I usually play for an hour or so in the evening. It really relaxes me after a day pounding a hammer.
He touched her arm lightly at the elbow to lead her into his room.
Would you like to hear a bit?
He said with a grin as he walked over to his instrument lying on a small table by his bed. I would love to, she enthused. She sat down on the edge of his bed.
Connor picked up the carved wooden instrument and tuned it for just a minute. He adjusted it against his body and began to play a lovely, haunting melody.
Jamie was not familiar with the piece, but it was eerily beautiful, and Connor played it with a depth of emotion that truly astounded her. When he was finished, Jamie sat transfixed for just a moment. She slowly said, I can't tell you how beautiful that was, Connor. Thank you for sharing it with me.
She stood and touched his arm in a friendly gesture.
Come to Papa,
he thought to himself.
I'm not going to let you have this one, Ryan. She's staying on my side of the river.
After a short tour was complete, they began to make their way down the stairs. Ryan was sitting on the third step, leaning casually against the wall with her long legs effectively blocking their path.
Did our house just get a lot bigger, or did you show Jamie the roof?
She asked sweetly.
No, the house is the same. Jamie was just interested in my mandolin, and I played a bit for her.
He replied casually.
She replied suspiciously. Well, I've been working on my atrocious manners while you were gone, and I realized that Jamie has not been properly introduced to the rest of the clan,
she said as she removed Jamie's hand from Connor's arm and placed it on her own.
I plan to rectify my error immediately.
She gave Connor a twitch of her long black hair and moved off with her friend firmly in tow. You two never stop, do you?
Jamie asked her with a giggle.
No, we don't,
she admitted with a little embarrassed grin.
We've always been competitive. I guess you just stick with familiar patterns as you grow up. But it's funny,
she reflected.
We all played together growing up, but only Connor and I were ever really competitive with each other. It really doesn't make sense, but that's the way it worked out.
As they moved through the house,
Jamie mused that when she was with Ryan and her brother, they treated her like some prize they were fighting over. Ryan seems much more aggressive when Connor's around, and it feels a lot more like she's flirting with me,
she thought.
No, that's not it,
she corrected herself.
She's not flirting. She acts like she's already won. She actually acts like I'm her little prize. That would piss me off if Jack did that. I wonder why it doesn't bother me in the least when Ryan does it,
she mused. They maneuvered through the small house and eventually broke through the crowd in the kitchen to reach the tiny porch that overlooked a small backyard. There were about a dozen men in the yard, all gathered around two big Weber kettles. Ryan began to point them out.
I thought I would give you an overview before I boggle your mind with the introductions,
she explained.
This is the male side of Dawes' family,
she said as she indicated the men gathered on the lawn.
That's my Uncle Patrick,
she indicated a man slightly smaller than Martin, but just as handsome.
That's my Uncle Francis.
Here she pointed to an equally handsome, but slightly older-looking man, who was very muscular and brawny-looking.
And that's my Uncle Malachi.
She indicated the youngest and best-looking one of the bunch. He looked just like a slightly older Connor, although he was not quite as tall as the younger man. Wow, was all Jamie could say.
Now for the next generation.
She ticked off her cousins one by one.
Uncle Patrick has Neil, Kieran, Colm, and Donald.
She indicated each of the dark-haired men in turn.
Declan, Dermot, Liam, and Padraig belong to Malachi,
she said as she pointed them out.
And Frank, Sean, Seamus, and Brian are Uncle Francis's boys.
Is anyone in your family less than gorgeous?
Jamie finally uttered as she shook her head in amazement.
What do you mean?
Ryan responded with a little blush. Do you mean to tell me you don't know how beautiful everyone in your family is?
She asked in bewilderment. No, not really.
She finally replied.
I guess I never thought about it.
She said as she fidgeted a bit in obvious discomfort. You never thought about the fact that your uncles and cousins and brothers all look like Calvin Klein underwear models? She had to laugh at Ryan's perplexed expression.
Well, no, I never did,
she finally said.
Looks are not a big deal in my family. I mean, I know that we're not exactly ugly,
she said with a grin,
but we were never encouraged to feel good about ourselves because of how we looked.
She looked thoughtful for a moment before she continued.
Dahl always told us to never feel proud or ashamed of your gifts or abilities.
He said that what you did with those gifts and how you overcame your liabilities was all that mattered. Everything else was just genetics. Here she shrugged her broad shoulders slightly and looked to Jamie for comprehension.
He also told me to be very suspicious of someone who spent a lot of time complimenting my looks. He said if someone were very focused on the outside of me, they wouldn't have any time to look at the inside.
That's a wonderful view of the world. It's very different from how I was raised, but I like it a lot better.
She grinned in appreciation at Ryan.
Were looks a big deal in your family?
Ryan asked with concern. Not just looks, although that was important, but appearances were a big thing for us, she replied. You know, wearing the right clothes, being seen with the right people, driving the right car, that sort of thing.
She grew thoughtful for a long moment.
I'm going to try to adopt your philosophy for my children, she told Ryan sincerely.
You can thank Da for that bit of philosophy,
she replied.
Speaking of Da, I know he wants to see you,
she said as she guided Jamie down the stairs to the gaggle of flattery men.
Ryan's immediate family had joined the outdoor crowd, and Jamie was warmly welcomed by each man. She was properly introduced to each of the uncles and cousins next. She received a friendly greeting from each, and a few polite questions about her background, and after a bit, they left the men to continue tending to the barbecues. The return trip was more difficult than the outbound had been. Rather than trying to negotiate the interior staircase, Ryan led her out the front door, down the stairs, and past a two-car garage, to a door on the ground floor.
This way is easier today,
she announced as she produced her key and unlocked the frosted glass panel door. Jamie's head was spinning when they entered the room after a short trip down a narrow hallway that took him past the length of the garage. I don't think I can remember one person's name,
she moaned.
There were so many of them, and they look so much alike.
Well, there are the two sets of twins,
Ryan said matter-of-factly.
Two?
Yeah. Sean and Seamus, Declan and Dermot, are twins.
At least I'm not totally losing my mind, she laughed.
Do you really want to remember them all?
Ryan asked with a puzzled look.
Yeah, of course I do. Will you go over them again and quiz me?
They knelt at the head of Ryan's bed and looked out the big windows at all the assembled men.
After 4 or 5 tries, Jamie had them all pretty well sorted out.
Okay, Ryan, I want you to lean over and quiz me all day. That's the only way I'll learn. But it might help if you wrote them down for me, too. I remember things better when I see them.
I'm not sure that will help you,
she advised.
Take port, for example. How would you spell that?
I guess it would be P-O-R-I-C?
Nope. P-A-D-R-A-I-G.
She smiled as Jamie tried to get her mind around the odd spelling. Are they all that bad?
No. I'd say Kieran, Porig, Neil, and Shaban are the worst of the bunch.
I don't believe you told me your mother's name, she asked softly.
Fionnuala.
Ryan replied, even more quietly.
Jamie placed her hand on Ryan's shoulder and forced eye contact. It's beautiful, she said sincerely.
Ryan was totally charmed and touched by how interested Jamie was in her family. After they completed a few more rounds of guess the cousins, she pronounced Jamie ready to meet the rest of the family.
You need to meet the O'Flattery's aunts and the Ryans. But don't worry, she reassured her. There are far fewer of them, and their names are more American.
She teased. If there are fewer of them, why is your house so crowded?
She asked in amazement.
Oh, there's people from my parish here. Some of my aunt's families are here, and even a few neighbors. But I'm not even going to introduce you to any of the ancillary people. It's hard enough just to get the key players memorized, especially given the difficult names.
I must admit, I've never heard so many Irish names in one place.
She paused for a moment to reflect.
You've never told me how your family came to America. I mean, were your parents born here?
Not hardly.
Ryan replied with a laugh.
As a matter of fact, I wasn't born here.
Are you serious?
Jamie was shocked. She assumed that most Irish people were third or fourth generation Americans, even though she had to admit that Martin's accent was far from American.
Quite.
Ryan replied.
That was a bit of a fluke. My mother came to this country about 1965 or so. She met my father and they married a couple of years later. The boys were all born here, but when she was 7 months pregnant, with me, her mother in Ireland became very ill. She felt like she had to go home, even though it must have been hell on Da, to be left with 3 little boys. And I suppose it was pretty bad for her, too, having to travel that far when she was huge with me. After she was there for a month, I surprised everyone by arriving almost a month early.
So you're an Irish citizen?
Jamie asked, not sure of a citizenship requirement.
Actually, I have dual citizenship. The boys could have it, too, and Roy went through the process. But Karin and Brendan don't have much interest.
So your father was born here?
Jamie asked.
Correct, but with an explanation,
she teased.
He and all of his brothers were born here. Their parents had immigrated during World War II. But after the war, my grandfather could not keep a job because of all the returning vets, so they eventually went back home. I think they left here in 1950 or so.
So is your father a citizen?
Jamie asked, still a little confused.
Yes, he is. But my mother was illegal. She was just here on a tourist visa, which had long expired when she met Da. His brothers still tease him that she married him only for his citizenship status.
I never thought of Irish people being illegal aliens, she mused.
Last time I checked, we were the second largest group of illegal aliens in this country, she admitted. But we look like Americans, and people are charmed by Irish accents, so there's very little prejudice against us anymore.
That's pretty neat that you are an Irish citizen, though. Could you move there if you wanted to?
Yeah, but I don't see that's happening. If he's totally American,
she says, she gave a little salute. Even though I've spent a ton of time in Ireland, I've always ready to come home.
What happened with your grandmother? Did she die?
She asked tentatively.
Nope. She's still kicking, along with my grandfather. She'll be 80 next year, and my grandfather will be 85. They're both pretty spry.
She said affectionately.
Do you have many other relatives there?
Jamie asked.
Yeah. My father has tons of cousins and a few uncles and aunts still living around Tralee. And my mother's younger sister, Moira, still lives in the town they grew up in. Aunt Moira and her husband James have 4 kids. Aisling, Kate, Brennan, and Cormac.
More Irish names. And I bet I couldn't spell one of them.
Jamie teased.
Yes, you could use a good course in Gaelic just to hang out with my family. But speaking of family, let's go meet the rest of them.
It took nearly 20 minutes for Ryan to introduce Jamie to her aunts Eileen, Deidre, and Peggy. Each woman attentively asked Jamie about herself and her family, but something caught Ryan's eye, and she was pulled away from the small group of women.
You must meet my favorite relative,
she said as she wiggled an eyebrow and led Jamie through the growing mass of people and finally found the prize that Ryan had been searching for.
There she is,
Ryan said with delight as her eyes locked onto the object of her affection, a pair of equally delighted green eyes. Ryan held out her strong arms, and a tiny face beamed up to her.
The cutest baby that Jimmy had ever seen clearly knew who she wanted to be with. She continued to squeal until Ryan had her grasped firmly in her arms. Both beautiful faces were broad smiles that made Jamie's heart melt.
"Is this the most beautiful child you've ever seen?"
Ryan asked in a tone that brooked no dissent. Jamie studied the little person. She was very small, maybe a month old, fair skin with a shock of blonde hair. Beautiful light green eyes were framed with long blonde eyelashes that batted at Ryan a bit shyly as she nestled her little head in the crook of her broad shoulder.
"I would have to agree with you that one, Ryan. What is this tiny beauty's name?"
she said as she tickled the perfect little foot.
"This is Caitlin,"
Ryan pronounced as she gave the precious bundle a kiss on her cheek.
"She's my cousin Tommy's baby."
She looked around the room for the proud parents.
"That's Tommy there, and his wife Annie is right there."
She pointed in one direction, then the other as Jamie confirmed their sightings.
"But when they're here, they never get to see Caitlin. We're always fighting over who gets to hold her. Ryan wins, huh, Caitlin?"
she whispered conspiratorially into the tiny ear. Jamie was delighted to see Ryan interact so lovingly with this tiny child.
"Boy, she would be a good mother. I wonder if she plans on having children."
"You know, Jamie,"
she said as she held Caitlin up to next to Jamie's face, "I've always thought there was something familiar about the way you look. She looks more like you than anyone else here."
Jamie looked at the tiny face, and they gave her another long look at each of the child's parents. There were little pieces of Caitlin on each face, but neither matched the child's quite as well as she did. "She looks just like my baby pictures," she marveled.
Various members of the clan agreed with the assessment. As Jamie was paraded around, Ryan would hold baby next to her face and ask for an opinion. But when she was introduced to the baby's grandmother, Ryan's aunt Maeve, the agreement was beyond enthusiastic. Maeve made over Jamie as if she were sent directly from heaven. She looked at her from every angle and finally wrapped her in a big hug as she said that Caitlin would be lucky indeed to continue to resemble Jamie as she got older. To get away from the crowds, they decided to go downstairs to play with the baby. She was still a little young to be able to do much, but she loved to be talked to and held. They took all of Ryan's pillows and made a safe little nest for the baby. When they got her settled, Ryan lay face down on the bed and rested on her arms. She held up a little rattle. She entertained little Caitlin by holding it up and quickly hiding it under a large hand for several minutes. The baby was having a very good time, but after 5 or so minutes, she started to slump over, even with the generous support, so Ryan picked her up and cuddled her again. Ryan continued to gently bounce the tiny baby up and down. After a few moments, her little head dropped onto Ryan's shoulder. She grabbed a small little handful of black t-shirt material rhythmically. Ryan smiled down at the still form and kissed her gently on the head.
"Do you want to put her down on the bed?" Jamie asked. "She must be getting heavy."
"She's not heavy at all," she disagreed. "She's clearly a Ryan. She went to the doctor the other day, and Annie said she's only in the 20th percentile in weight and the 25th in height. Besides, I really like holding her," she replied a little sheepishly. "I see her a lot, but still, she's different every time. She's growing so fast. I won't be able to do this for long, and I really want to enjoy it while I can."
Jamie approached and patted Ryan softly on the shoulder.
"You're such a sweet person. You're just a mass of contradictions," she said with a smile. "You look all strong and confident like a real loner, but you're such a tender person when you're with people you trust."
Ryan replied with just a sweet, crooked grin.
"So little Caitlin is Ryan?"
"Well, technically she's a Driscoll," she admitted. "Maeve was married to Charlie Driscoll, and they had 3 sons, one of which was Michael. After Michael got sick, Charlie went off the deep end. They wound up separated, and they remained so until he died about 2 years ago. It was really hard for Maeve and the boys, but he was just not able to open his mind to his son," she said sadly.
After a few moments of watching Caitlin sleep, Jamie asked quietly,
"Do you want to have children?"
"Yes, I do,"
she said confidently.
"I actually can't imagine not having them,"
she admitted. She paused for a moment.
"I'm not sure how I will do it, though,"
she added.
"Do you mean technically?"
Jamie asked tentatively. "No, I mean whether I would physically have them, or adopt, or just co-parent with another woman," she laughed.
"How would you do it, physically?" she persisted.
"Lesbian have the same parts that you do, Jamie," she teased.
"That's not what I mean, and you know it."
She gave a little slap on the head.
"I mean, would you, use somebody that you know? Would you do it the old-fashioned way, or what?"
"I really have no desire to experience that particular union,"
she said with an involuntary shudder. "I would probably either be inseminated from a known donor, or use a sperm bank."
Would you want the donor to have a role in raising the child?
That is where it becomes tricky for me.
She admitted,
I would not want to deprive my child of having a wonderful father like mine. But I'm not sure how I would do that in a way that makes everyone happy. I must admit, that's the only part of being straight that I envy. She teased. Well, that and the marriage laws.
That is one of the perks, Jamie added. But the downside is that you have to use birth control most of the time.
Jamie made a sour face at this. Guess having kids is a big deal for everyone.
Ryan agreed.
What about you? I assume you and Jack are planning to reproduce, although you made it clear you're not ready yet.
Yeah, Jamie agreed. I think we both want a few kids, but I want to be significantly older before I do that.
What do you want to do before you have kids?
Ryan asked. I'm not sure, but I want to do something for myself, like graduate school, or maybe I'll write for a while.
I don't know, Jamie. A little of one of these? Here she tipped the sleeping baby towards her friend. Can be awfully tempting.
After a few minutes, Ryan offered to go upstairs and fetch some drinks and something to snack on. To avoid waking Caitlin, Jamie sat down on the bed as Ryan transferred the precious cargo to her lap. Caitlin stirred just a little as she adjusted to her new home. The little blonde head was comfortably resting on Jamie's breast as she slowly moved down a perfect little thumb into her mouth. I see your point about the temptation, Ryan.
She admitted she gazed down at the baby.
I can feel my ovaries aching already.
Ryan smiled sweetly as she took in the scene. I think motherhood would suit you, Jamie. You two look perfect together.
She said with a big smile as she turned to climb the stairs. Ryan had just been gone a minute or two when there was a quiet knock on the door. Caitlin's grandmother poked her head in and said, I just wanted to check to make sure you didn't need any. Nope, everything's just perfect, Jamie said as she smiled up at the proud grandmother. I must say, this is one lucky baby, Jamie stated. Well, I do know that she's loved beyond words.
Maeve agreed as she retrieved the clean diaper from the bag she carried. She placed the cloth on Jamie's shoulder to protect her blouse as she casually added,
How long have you and Ryan been seeing each other?
Jamie knew that her blush was rapidly traveling up to her hairline.
Maeve, she finally said, Ryan and I aren't together in that way. She quietly stated, We're just close friends. Oh dear, I hope I didn't embarrass you. I'm sorry for making assumptions.
She patted Jamie's arm reassuringly.
It's probably just wishful thinking on my part.
She admitted sadly.
What do you mean?
Jamie asked. Her interest piqued.
I was so pleased that Ryan just brought someone home to meet the family.
She explained.
She's never done so before, and I just assumed you were someone special to her.
She is, came the quiet voice from across the room. She's very special to me. Ryan was crossing the room now, with a small smile on her face. Regrettably, she's not my girlfriend, though. She stated as she shot a grin at Jamie. Jamie was terribly pleased at this expression of their growing bond. She grinned up at Ryan broadly.
You're pretty special yourself, kiddo. I'm sorry for jumping to conclusions, Ryan.
Maeve said sincerely.
I just hope that when you bring someone home, she's as special as young Jamie here.
Regrettably, the odds of that are not good. Ryan intoned seriously. Jamie is truly one of a kind. She said as she watched the blush rise on her friend's face. After Caitlin woke, Ryan changed a diaper and the three of them went back upstairs. Jamie was charmed at how Ryan just claimed the small child as her own. The baby was very content to be carried around all day, and Jamie found it cute that most of the cousins teased Ryan about when she would have a child of her own.
They certainly seemed comfortable with her sexual orientation. Maybe that's because she seemed so sure of herself. It's hard to be uncomfortable around someone who seems so comfortable with themselves.
Dinner was ready at around 5 o'clock. Martin had roasted a huge turkey and ham on the barbecues. The aunts had each brought a dish or two, and the feast filled the dining room table. Since everyone was now inside, the noise was really increasing. Jamie felt her cell phone vibrate from its place on a waistband.
Uh-oh, that's gotta be Jack.
She briefly debated to letting it ring, though she thought better of it and stepped outside through the front door. She could still hear the muffled din coming from the house, but she fervently hoped that Jack could not.
Hello?
She said as she answered on the fifth ring.
Hi.
Jack replied, sounding a little small.
How are you, sweetheart?
She said with surprising warmth.
I'm okay. Where are you?
He asked. I'm back in the city, honey.
She knew that she was intentionally misleading him, but she did not have any intention of continuing the fight.
Are we okay, or are you still mad at me?
I'm not mad, Jamie. You've been so different lately. I'm just really confused.
Jamie was dismayed to hear him sounding so sad. Do you want to be alone? Would you like me to come back down? She offered.
Would you do that?
He asked, hopefully.
I really do want to see you, Jamie. I miss you, sweetheart.
He added quietly. I'll be there by 8 o'clock, she promised. What would you like me to bring for dinner?
I don't care about dinner. I just want you.
He said wistfully. Jamie didn't eat much of the celebratory feast. She was working over in her mind how she was going to avoid Jack's questions about why she was dressed up. I know. I'll stop at the Nordstrom on Market and buy a new outfit. My pants are all falling off anyway. I could use another pair of jeans until I gain the weight back. Ryan was watching as she picked at her food. They were sitting nearly at the top of the staircase that led to the third floor. All of the other stairs were already being occupied. Baby was still being held by one strong arm while Ryan tried to get a bite or two of dinner into her mouth.
Was that Jack on the phone?
She eventually asked. Oh, yeah, it was. Think I'm going to go back down to Palo Alto, she replied.
Are you two having trouble?
She asked with concern.
Jamie regarded her for a moment before answering.
Yeah, I guess we are. Things just haven't been great for a while now.
Ryan looked at her with sympathy and said, If you need someone to listen, I'm always here for you.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that more than I can say.
She removed Ryan's plate from her hand and said,
If I don't help you out here, you're going to starve.
She balanced Ryan's sturdy plate on her knees and cut up her turkey into small pieces. Then she speared bites of turkey and vegetables and fed them to her friend, one at a time.
I guess this is why it's so hard to be a single parent.
Ryan stated she moved Caitlin's hand from her hair.
Connor and Rory sat on the other side of the room with a few cousins. Connor leaned over and quietly asked his brother,
So, what do you think about Jamie?
I like her a lot. She seems like a good friend to Ryan,
Rory explained.
No. I mean, do you think Ryan's going to make a play for her?
He explained.
Why do you want to know?
Rory asked suspiciously.
Because I think she would be perfect for me,
he said smugly.
I'll make you a friendly wager on that, Connor.
Rory replied with a glimmer.
If young Jamie is swayed by any of flattery, I'm putting my money on Ryan.
You're on, Rory. Let's make it interesting. Say $50.
He said as he shook hands to seal the bet. Rory cast a glance at the pair and watched Jamie carefully feeding his sister.
It would be a lot easier for Jamie to just hold the baby while Ryan fed herself.
He thought to himself with a smirk.
I think my money is good as won.
Jamie had to leave well before the party was over. Caitlin was asleep on Ryan's chest again, and Jamie leaned over to kiss her sweet-smelling little head.
I had a great time, Ryan. Thanks for letting me meet your family.
Ryan pulled Jamie back down by placing her hand behind her neck. She kissed her cheek lightly as she said,
Thank you for coming, Jamie. You made the day special for me.
On the short drive to Nordstrom, Jamie tried to remind herself it was perfectly normal to feel affectionate with your female friends. But a little voice kept asking,
Is it normal to feel tingles down your spine when they kiss your cheek?
She dashed into the store and purchased a new pair of jeans and a fleece long-sleeved shirt. She asked the sales clerk to remove the tags. While the clerk rang up the purchases, she went back into the dressing room and changed into the new clothes. The clerk put her other outfit into a bag and handed it to Jamie with a little puzzled look. She arrived at Jack's just before 8 p.m. She had stopped and bought dinner from a favorite deli. Jack was very glad to see her, so he wrapped her in a big hug. He had his face pressed against her neck for a long time. Finally, he released her and said sadly,
Do you still love me, Jamie?
Of course I do, Jack, she said with feeling. I'm unsure about a lot of things, but I know that I do love you,
she said fiercely. She wrapped her arms around his neck as he bent to kiss her. As they progressed into their intimacy, they stumbled toward the bedroom. Dinner left to cool on the counter. To be continued.
Well, that concludes episode number 166 of XNU, and that is chapter 7 of I Found My Heart in San Francisco, book 1, Awakenings, by Susan Meyer. We're going to leave it here so that we can start fresh on chapter 8 at the beginning and continue on from there. And I hope everyone's enjoying the series so far. I do understand that it is quite a long series, and most of you want to just get to the juicy bit. But to give the author credit and the story and the characters due justice, this is what we're going to do. If anyone has any recipes, music snippets, songs, ideas, announcements, or you just want to shoot the crap, you know, send me an email, xena.uber@gmail.com. So until the next episode, everyone, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye.